the reason to go, people. It's a reason to be there, to be a part of it. Do they have replays on the internet? Does anyone know, on the website? Okay, so if you'd like to see some of the replays of it, just go on to your Manitech webpage and you can download those and watch those, just like we did for Manifest. And I know that the recording of it, I had a couple of people who didn't go to Denver, who had lots of people who didn't go, but a couple of them chose to watch it on their new webcasting that they're doing, and they said it was terrific. It was 10,000 times better than any other convention that Manitech had ever done. So it apparently we're getting more and more proficient with the technology of being able to transmit this convention over the air to everybody. So I'm really excited about that aspect of it too. So for those of you who can't go, at least you can participate at some level in it. And that's a great thing to do. Even if you're not there, you know, watch it on the internet, and you'll get that same kind of sense of momentum and, you know, just seeing where this company is going, which is truly explosive, a really explosive growth. In fact, that's one of the reasons we keep running out of Amertos. So anyway, hopefully we won't see too much more of that. I think they have new projections for the year that are off the charts. So just now it's up to us to fulfill those projections, right, group? Amen to that. All right, so that's the Denver National. Great. And then the other thing we want to talk about is the incentive program. Don't forget, we only have 6 weeks left. Woo, it's getting really tight. That's 6 more weeks. It's time to blitz. I think next Monday's call, I'm going to really dedicate to... You're in the checking. Please, somebody's calling their bank. Thank you. This is not a call for the bank. Yeah, that's three-way calling into your bank as you're on your training call. Anyway, the important thing with the incentive is to really get to work and start blitzing towards it. Next Monday call, I'm going to dedicate to blitz. I'm going to dedicate to how to blitz, what to do in a blitz, and give you a dozen or more suggestions on how to make this happen for you, because it's critical for us to get as many people on that trip as possible. You all want to be leaders. You want to represent your organization in the right way, which means you need to be in Cancun. That's the way you show your leadership. You do it by action. You do it by committing yourself and making things happen, and people around you will pick up that passion, pick up that energy, and move forward with it. So let's make sure that we all get on that call next Monday to talk about the blitz and how to get there. And even if you've already won the blitz, it's a great call to be on, because we're just going to take different strategies from people and just give you, you know, a dozen or so new strategies that you may never have heard of before that'll help you really implement in your organization new ideas on how to get help other people win this trip. Even though there'd be only 5 weeks left at that point in time, we all need to be on that in Cancun. And it doesn't matter whether you need GPV or you need points. There's 101 mechanisms to get you there. So let's make sure it happens for everybody. It's better to go after a second trip. You bet. It's not like the cruises. You don't get a better cabin. Mm-mm. So just go after another trip. I'm trying to get some of my people to go after a second trip, because then you can bring family members. You know, just make sure that whoever you're winning that trip in is another family member, because you can't transfer. They're non-transferable. So whoever's position you win that second one in, they have to go. They can invite somebody, but then you can split up who you invite. So you can take your whole family if you've got four of you. So great. Okay, good. All right. Any other questions about the incentive? Yes, you can ask another question. Yep. Like dentures. I got it. Okay, soak your wellness water bottle. Yeah, sure does. That's I love marketing. It sure so. It kind of sounds like the more incredible your cleansing response, the better the products are for you. The products are great for everybody, but you know, cleansing responses do show your body hasn't had good nutrients for a long time. But I'm not sure you can say the better it is for you. So I would watch some of that language, but that's good. No, it's good. So, but you want to make sure you can do you. The problem is that if it becomes just exactly whoever that was who offered that information, which thank you for, if you make something so troublesome and so onerous for somebody to do, like something as simple as drinking water, they're sure as heck not going to use the wellness bottle. So you've got to make it something simple and make it very workable, otherwise they won't use it. So anyway, great information. And scrubbing with a toothbrush, I just wanted to ask, what part of the wellness bottle do you scrub with the toothbrush? Just the filter. The filter part. Okay, got it. Okay, good. But just wondering, just want to make sure that was clear, because I wasn't sure whether we were talking about the cap that you screw on, you want to scrub with the toothbrush. Yeah, okay. All right, good, good, good. All right, any other information there? We'll jump in and talk about our next habit to get to the right quadrants. I am on my way to Indianapolis about a half hour after I get off this call. Yeah, Lydia, you bet. Okay, you betcha. All right, okay. Let's go forward. Let's talk about let's see. Oh yeah, one other thing I wanted to mention. Lydia asked me to bring it up. The a lot of you just concluded the pathway class that I did starting in January of this year, and we are now announcing our next pathway course, and she will send that out. I think she might have already sent a flyer out to everybody on the call, but just so you know, it's a pathway to presidential class. It's a 5-month course that goes through 6 sessions, 4 hours apiece. We have a lot of people on the call that have been on it. Any feedback from you guys who are on the in the class? Hello. Yeah. Great. Great. Absolutely. We're going to do a rerun again, just like we did this first 6 months. We did it live on a Saturday morning, and the reruns are going to always probably take place on a Sunday evening, so we can incorporate anyone who's got different spiritual beliefs. We want to make sure everybody gets the opportunity to participate. So, Well, the massive amount of homework comes with the first 2 sessions because we do a lot of goal setting, vision setting, you know, those kind of things. This time we're going to be doing actually a mission statements type thing. So, but I give 4 weeks between the classes up front. So you have 4 weeks to do the initial homework assignments in the first 2 periods, and then after that, there's very limited amount of homework. So the Yeah. Let's just put it's homework that is essential if you want to really take this business to another level. Because if you don't, it's kind of foundational. If you don't take the foundational steps, if you don't build the foundation to your business, it's never going to go anywhere for you. And trust me, I've seen it happen so many times. You can say, "Well, Mary Jo, this person didn't do this, this, and this, and look at their presidential." Well, my next statement to you is, look at them 2 years from now and see where their business is. Because the concept behind building a business isn't using 100% of your own energy to make it happen. It's a concept of how do you develop yourself, how do you set the vision, set the goals, and how do you help and grow other people in your organization? Because that's what's going to make the difference for you in this business and in every aspect of your life. You want to be an empowering person, you don't want to be an enabling person. So the course is structured to help you become the best you can be in terms of not just your own business, but in leadership skills to help develop other people too. So anyway, but if you're interested in taking the pathway course, Lydia's adamant about not allowing as many people as we did last time. We just opened the floodgates and they came in. So she's limiting to 100 people in the class this time. So the first 100 people will be the ones that are going to be in the course. So you need to get a hold of Lydia or send your check and there's a information form that you have to fill out that we need information on you, and you can get that from Lydia if you need it. Okay, enough on pathway to presidential. And that course kicks off in July. It's the first week is like third or fourth weekend in July. I'm not sure which one, but she has all the dates on that too. And that's, I'm sorry? The deadline is July 1st, assuming, or it's the earlier of us getting 100 registrants, and we're already over 20, us getting 100 registrants, or July 1st. Whichever comes first is going to be the deadline for that class. Okay? Okay. Ooh, somebody's washing dishes in the background. Can we get you to mute, star 6? Okay, thanks. All right, let's jump in and talk about our next habit that we want to look at in terms of moving out of the E and the S quadrants into the B quadrants. We've been working on this topic for about 5 weeks now, and we've gotten quite a few habits out there. Synergy, leverage, becoming a master asker. All of these are incredibly important things to shift in your life, and I know a lot of you have gotten some phenomenal ahas through some of these classes because I've gotten some great feedback, emails, and phone calls on people who've learned a lot and started looking at themselves a little bit differently than they had before, and seeing maybe some roadblocks in their life and what's kind of holding them back. The habit I want to talk about today is really a habit that comes out of Stephen Covey's book. But it's so critical in the quadrant moves, and sometimes we don't see the importance of how it moves you from one quadrant to the other. So I'm going to really highlight on that. And this is the beginning with the end in mind. That's the habit to establish, and very critical one to establish to move you from the E and the S quadrants to the B quadrant, which is where we all want to be an effective Manatech distributor, to really enjoy the abundance and the leverage and the possibilities in our lives. And so let's kick off and look at what does it mean. I've got some sounds like the ocean of Spain in the background, so I'm going to star 5. Okay, that should hopefully cut out the background noise. What does it mean to begin with the end in mind? And the opening premise here is to start with, you're going to start with a clear understanding of your destination. So you know where you're going. And that doesn't mean where you're going to go today. It means what your life's going to look like, you know, 20 years, 50 years, what your legacy is going to look like 500 years from now. That's really what this is talking about. Starting off with a clear understanding of your destination. Those in the S and the E quadrant tend to spend more time in what we call the do part of the triangle, be, do, have. Some of you might be familiar with be, do, have. It's a popular kind of training that's been going on out there for, 20 years now. It basically talks about a lot of us, we work on doing because we think that action gets us what we have in life. If we act enough, if we keep busy enough, we're going to achieve something. And a lot of people make that happen. If you work hard enough, you're going to get, you know, some kind of, you know, material possessions or whatever you define as success in your life. And that can happen. But the biggest problem with it is if you don't work on the first part of that triangle, which is the B, you're going to end up very empty-handed and very shallow. And the have, whatever you have, you'll watch dissipate over time. So you really need to work on the B part of that triangle, not the do part of the triangle. B is the foundational part of that. It's like, you know, who are you? In fact, I talk to some people when I do coaching calls and I say, you know, it's great that you do your to-do list every day, but you know, every week when you do a list of what you need to accomplish, you ought to have a to-be list. What are you going to work on in your life about your beingness to be different? What are the aspects of your life you need to correct, whether it's integrity or commitment or, you know, honor or, you know, compassion? What is it about you that you want to work on in you as a person? It's not all we get so caught up in daily activity, shuffling papers, internet, phone calls, you know, prospecting, all these things, when we really need to concentrate also on the B. In fact, first and foremost on the B. So you watch these people in the S and E quadrant, especially the self-employed quadrant, man, they keep busy as all dickens because they're so tied up into what they do and they do it best, so they keep busy all the time. They very easily get caught up in the keeping busy motor, what they call the activity trap. And we can do that in Manatech. How do we do that in Manatech? How do you guys keep into the activity trap in Manatech? I see it all the time in my organization. I see people go, oh, Mary Jo, but I'm on 17 different phone calls a week, and I do these, and I do this, and I go out here, and I do, and we just get active, active, active. And I'm not telling you that action isn't required. Absolutely, you have to have action. But you need to have a strategic plan. You need to know why you're acting the way you're doing. You need to know what the end result is, and not today, but the end result overall will be in your life. Now your actions can be in alignment with your core values. So now your actions can be effective, because actions can be taken, and many of you can look back and stare at some of the things you've done in Manatech, and you can say, oh my gosh, this is hitting home for me. I keep active all the time. But how effective am I at what I'm doing? And therein lies the big question. How effective are you in what you're doing? And if you find a shortfall in effectiveness, I'm going to suggest to you it's because you're not working on the be part of the triangle. You're working on the do, 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 do. If I do this enough, and I do this enough, and I do this, and I do this, and I do this, it's going to work. Well, it might work for you. You might, you know, achieve a little bit of, you know, abundance in your life, but because you've only worked on just the do, 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 you're going to miss the fullness of the abundance that's available for you. So analyze your daily behavior and look at, say, I better slow down and stop looking at just keeping active and start trying to be more effective with the actions I undertake. And that's important to do. So be careful of what that activity is, and be very analytical about what kind of activities you're involved in so you can be more effective and efficient with what you're doing. In order to really work on that B-qua part of the triangle, you need to look at what are your deep fundamental values. In other words, in order to understand your destination, you need to know what the fundamental values are that are so critical for you. And each one of us is very different, so each one of us is very unique. So we need to do that. So some people ask the question, what's the best way to really be in search of those deep fundamental values? Now, I do a value exercise in my pathway class that's very effective to help people start evaluating what's most important. It's a beginning piece of how to evaluate what's most important in your life. Another great technique, which actually comes out of Dr. Covey's book, is the concept of, you know, viewing, just take some, well, first of all, you need to separate yourself from what's going on in your daily life. Lock yourself in a room, whatever you need to do to take away all your distractions. And some of you have a hard time doing that because you got 17 kids running all over the place, kind of like my stepdaughter in Spain. Oh my goodness, a 3, a 2, and a 9-month-old. I don't know how she does it, but I don't know how you find any place where you can have a small little bit of time of freedom. But you want to get away, break away from your daily routine. And I suggest you do it even today. Take a time out. And some of you go, I don't have time. Oh, that's the biggest fallacy on the face of the earth. Everybody has time. It's what are you prioritizing your time with? That's the issue. It's not the lack of time. It's what are you prioritizing? So, and when you start putting yourself last on that totem pole, you're going to get that as a result. You're going to come in last. So start putting yourself at the top of that and dealing with who you are and finding out what that end is for you, the destination for you. So isolate yourself, spend an hour of time, and just start visualizing. The first thing you want to do is visualize a funeral service and look at, you know, the people coming in and all that kind of stuff, and all the look at all your friends, relatives, business associates, and now notice that it's your funeral that's going on. And from that point, you want to start listening to what people say about you. So if something happened to you today, what would people say about you at your funeral? What would your parents say? What would your siblings say? What would your offspring say? What would your aunts, uncles, your other relatives? What would your friends, what would your neighbors say? What would your business associates in Manatech say about you? What would your, you know, whoever in your life, what would their comments be about you? The most important part then becomes, what do you want them to say about you? What would be most meaningful to you? If something happened to you today, you were attending your own funeral, what would you want to hear out of your mother's mouth? What would you want to hear out of your dad's mouth? What would you want to hear out of your children, out of your business associates, out of your friends, out of your next door neighbor? What do you want them to be saying about you? And go through each of those levels with each of those people. Pick different people in your life and write. What kind of eulogy, or what would they say about you and your life? And take a piece of paper. When you're sitting by yourself doing this exercise, take a pad of paper and write out, word for word, exactly what you would like them to write about you. And you can even say it, my dear friend, you know, write in their terms about you, what you would like them to say. When you get done with this exercise, which you can spend a good hour doing because you want to pick many people in your life, now look back at that sheet of paper, or the many sheets of paper, And you're going to find running through the commentary that you've written down on those sheets of paper, you're going to start realizing what those core values are for you, what's most important for you, what really is meaningful to you. And that's going to help you to build what that end is in mind. So a great, great exercise to do, a challenging exercise, something that, again, no distractions, total concentration, total digging into what is it that I want people to remember me for? What have I accomplished? And you get real creative. You've got to use your imagination because, you know, you can write down about the things that you're going to form in your life, the foundation you set up, the mass, you know, marketing that you did, the impact you had on thousands of lives, the, you know, community centers you developed, the whatever. This is, you want to write down what you see in your life that's going to happen between now and when that day actually occurs that people are going to acknowledge you for. What is it that you have that's so important to you that you want people to be talking about you after you're gone? So hopefully that helps you. That's just a great little exercise. If you take part and do that exercise, you're going to just really open up some new ideas and new thoughts and new processes for yourself to really totally start understanding what that's about. What am I about? What is it that I'm here for? What is that end in mind for me? Okay, so that's, again, how do I get to that point of finding those deep fundamental values that are most critical, most important to me? That's a great exercise for it. The next part of the outline talks about everything being created twice, and there's an absolute reality to this. There's a mental creation, and then there's a physical creation. The mental creation is the plan. It's kind of like formulating what it's going to look like, and that's what this habit is, beginning with the end in mind. You have a plan. It's about, you know, what is that going to look like? What's the end result going to be? And then after you figure out what the end result's going to be, then you got to sit down and you do the strategic planning to how to get from what the plan is, what the end result is, what that final product's going to look like, how do I get from where I am today to complete that? And that becomes more the management side of it. So the first part is the creative side of it, what am I going to create? And the second part of it is the execution on that creation. And it's true about everything that happens in our lives. We create everything twice. When you build a house, you first have to have a floor plan, you have to have the layout, you have to do all that. You've got to experience it, you got to see it, visualize it, and then from there you go for it. Now, some of you, you know, when you look at your life, you go, do you have that kind of plan in your Manitech business? Some of you are running your Manitech business and you're just kind of shooting from the hip. You don't have that end in mind. You're just going out and doing, doing, doing. Those are the people that get stuck in that do quadrant again. They're stuck in the do's. I just keep busy and it makes it happen. And you know what? Probably things will happen. If you keep active, you're going to create things, but you're going to be very inefficient, ineffective in what you do because you don't have the end in mind. You don't have that picture of what that looks like, and you haven't built the strategy around it. So it gets into the concept of, do you live your life by design or do you live your life by default? And the choice is totally yours. You can design your life or you can live your life by default. If you fail to draft your own script of what your life is like, what happens is you end up with other people scripting your life. And this is a reality, and it happens to us early on. You can see it. I can see it where it happened in my life. I can look at the different things that I did in my life that were really scripted by other people. I was a kind of a people pleaser. I really cared about what other people thought. I respected other people. I didn't do enough digging of myself. And as I was growing up as a kid, here's an example of what I'm saying. I was growing up as a child, and I had all these leadership skills, and everybody in the world was saying, oh my gosh, she's going to be in politics, da da da. And I listened to all this, and of course I ran for all the offices. One, I was president of my class, president of student council, president of this, president of that, da, da, da. Yay. And of course I went into undergraduate, and I loved different parts of my undergraduate studies, but I had to go to law school because, why? I was going to be in politics. And that was just part of the whole, I was allowing, because I did not draft my own script. I didn't dig into who Mary Jo was, what did she like the best, what are the things that just really were, she was passionate about, what were my core values. I didn't do that kind of analysis. So I allowed my life to be scripted by other people. I ended up in law school, I ended up practicing law, and I ended up being great at what I did, but not getting any real enjoyment. I mean, I didn't have that. I didn't feel like I was being rewarded. I didn't feel like I was making a difference. I didn't feel like I was achieving what God had set out for me to achieve in life. And I was allowing other people to script my life. And some of you can see that where that's happened in your life. And you can get your life scripted by people that are very close to you, people you trust and admire. And so you follow their directions, but it's not you. You're just following life by default instead of scripting your own life. Your pastor can do it, your parents, your spouse, your kids. There are all sorts of entities and people in your life that can script your life, and they will be more than happy to step in and script it. Because we have a lot of people that have a lot of ideas about what's right and wrong in your life that are totally independent from what truly is your own truth. So be careful of that. And then there's some people that are like a blade in grass. They script their life depending on who's in their life. So their life gets re-scripted. And somebody moves in and you move over this way. Somebody else, you probably have seen some people like this. You might even see it in your own life where you've moved from place to place and you've done different things and you've had different directions in your life because of somebody else's influence in your life. Some of the influences can be good if they're influences to help you open up your internal script. But most of that's not happening. It's influences to just, again, mask and allow you to escape from who you are and what your internal script is and follow what somebody else's script is for you. So be very careful of that. Don't let other people dictate to you. You want to surround yourself with people who help you find your own script, who respect you and love you for who you are and are helping you try to find out who that is, what is the most meaningful for you. And sometimes when we get involved in Manatech, we have a tendency to script people's lives for them, don't we? I mean, we'll go out there and say, oh, this is the best thing in the whole world. Oh, you got to do Manatech. And we push them and we shove them and we try to conform them and we move them and we manipulate them and we're up and down with them and we're motivating them. And these are the people that you get in Manatech, and all of us have been there if you've been in the business long enough. And it doesn't have to be that long. When you try to convince somebody that this is the best business for them, and it really isn't their desire, nor is it their passion, nor is it their want, and you are the one that's convincing them of that. You're trying to script their life for them, and some people fall for that because you're so powerful and you're so influential and motivational. But what happens in the long run with a lot of these people is that you spend a lot of energy and time around that, and 12 months later, they are long gone. And that's not what you're trying to do. In fact, one of the things I have in my pathway class is I teach, your job is not to convince other people to do this. Your job is, on the other hand, to find people who have a similar vision that you have and are going to do something about it once they have the opportunity in front of them. So really look at it that way from a perspective of don't try to re-script people's lives because it happens to be what you want in life. That's not what needs to happen. And we have too much of that going on. I think people can find themselves and find what's right for them. Some people are looking for guidance and you can help them, but it's not about your manipulation or your motivation or your, you know, totally converting their lives. It's about helping them see the vision if it happens to be their vision. But that's finding out more about them, not about you implanting in their brain things that are going to be convincing to them beyond what they might already desire in their life. So, and the interesting thing, I'll read this quote because I thought it was so great out of Covey's book. It's so true about what happens with all these scripts that we cast upon people in our lives or that we have people cast upon us. These scripts come from people, not principles. And they rise out of our deep vulnerabilities, our deep dependency on others, and our needs for acceptance and love, for belonging, for a sense of importance and worth, for a feeling that we matter. Whether we are aware of it or not, whether we are in control of it or not, there is a first creation to every part of our lives. We are either the second creation of our own proactive design, or we are the second creation of other people's agendas, of circumstances, or of past habits. Great quote, and I put that in the outline so you can read on that. And it's, again, right out of Covey's book, but it's an excellent quote. It really tells you about how we run our lives. So the next aspect is leadership. Leadership is really the first creation because leadership is where are you going? That's what leadership is all about. It's about guidance. It's about being able to, you know, have the insight on what direction to take and what action to take. And all that's part of leadership. What are you going to accomplish? What is that end in mind? What is that end for you? Management becomes the second creation. So again, everything is created twice. First of all, through leadership, it's the direction, it's the visionary. We always talk about in terms of Sam Castor being an incredible visionary. That is leadership. Leaders are visionaries. They have the vision. They set the vision. Management, on the other side, is the people like the Terry Persingers of the world. They're the ones that carry out the direction that the visionary sets. You look at Stan Frederick. If you remember on stage at Manifest, what did Stan say? He said, "My role in life is to follow the footsteps of Sam Castor and take his vision and make it a reality." So it's not about him having his own, he is sitting back saying, "I am here to fulfill the visions of Sam Castor." That's his role. He can see that. He is playing that management role. Sam is the creator. He's playing that management role of execution of that vision. So anyway, we need leadership first and then management. So some of us go backwards. And in fact, a lot of people in that ENS quadrant, they do management, management, management. Man, they're into management. Execution, execution, execution. Failing leadership. The vision isn't there. And we see that happen with people in that self-employed quadrant. They're self-employed. They're just working, 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 workaholics all the time, keeping busy all the time, keeping another, managing, 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 execution, execution. Everything's about execution. Where's the vision? Need the visionaries. And another quote out of Covey's book, which I loved, was, "No management success can ever compensate for the failure in leadership." Huge. So how do we develop, how do we really get to write our own script? He talks in terms of imagination and conscience together with self-awareness. Through imagination and conscience and self-awareness, we can rewrite our own script. Imagination, of course, is the concept that we can visualize the uncreated worlds of potential that lie within us. So it's about being creative. It's about sitting down and seeing the future and taking a vision about the future. And our conscience, we can come in contact with universal laws or principles with our own singular talents and avenues of contribution. So we're working on what are those universal laws or principles, our conscience, and part of that's going to come out very big when you do the funeral exercise. So those are great ways of starting to, you know, build your own script, starting to see yourself, what are people going to say about me? What is that going to look like when you know, that whole purposeful event in your life of, you know, seeing what I want people to say about me, what legacy do I want to leave? That's what you want to know. All right, so the most, so that kind of gives you a flavor of what is this all about, beginning with the end in mind, getting that structure in place, getting yourself in a position where you really understand who you are and you start scripting your life, building your life by design instead of by default, getting out of the active, active, active quadrant and getting into a quadrant where you're building, you're a visionary. The people in the B quadrant are visionaries. They're visionaries. They see the future. They see different things happening. They create different things in the future. They live in possibilities, not probabilities. They live in possibilities. So that's what you want to be doing. The most effective way to begin with the end in mind, according to Covey, he says, is to develop your own personal mission statement. And some of you have been involved in mission statements. Maybe if you've been in the corporate world, you've been a part of the process of developing mission statements in your corporate structure, because that happens frequently. But the incredible thing is that you want to be developing for yourself a personal mission statement. And again, getting back to who you are, every individual is totally unique. So you got to look at yourself and do some self-analysis, not look at somebody else. This isn't a cheat sheet thing where you go and find somebody else's personal mission statement and take from it, because now you're robbing again from yourself. You're letting somebody else script your life. So you want this to be something totally original for you, something totally original for you that comes from you internally. And the first thing to look at is whatever is at the center of your life will be the source of guidance, security, wisdom, and power. And I gave the definitions of those as they come out of Covey's book. Security is a sense of worth, your self-esteem, your emotional anchorage, your basic personal strength. Guidance is a source of direction in life. Kind of the principles that you live by, whatever criteria that govern moment-by-moment decision-making. In other words, when you make a decision to do or not to do something, there's something internal, a guidance system internally to you that causes that to happen. In fact, it's kind of an interesting analysis. When you get to know people, you can almost, you know immediately what they're going to say. A lot of you have that same sense with your spouse. I know that. I surely do. I know without a doubt. I can, before I even mention something to Hugh, I almost can tell you exactly what his reaction is going to be to it, because I know what guides him. I know what his internal guidance system is. I know by habits what I've seen him do. It's kind of a... It's our autonomic nervous system in its own incredible way in terms of our decision-making process. We automatically react a certain way because we're built that way. There are programs in our life, there are principles in our life that guide us and lead us and direct us, and we've had those pretty well in our lives for many, many years. So it's not we're not unpredictable behavior in regards to most of the decisions we make. The third is wisdom. Your perspective on, and sometimes we define this word many different ways, your perspective on life, your sense of balance, your understanding of how various parts and principles apply and relate to each other. It's kind of like how everything fits. We have an idea of how everything fits in our lives, how our value system, our principles apply to other aspects of our life. It's our wisdom and the power, which is the faculty or capacity to act, the strength and potency to accomplish something. It is vital energy to make choices and decisions. That's what the power is. So all these four things are guided by whatever center in your life. And you first have to say, okay, so what is central to my life? What is the center of my life? And this is fascinating. This is a great part of understanding yourself better too, because all of us have centers in our life, and maybe you don't know what yours is. But if you review what some of these centers are, you maybe can look at your life and say, wow, I have been family-centered all my life, or I've been spouse-centered. And I wrote in here the common centers that are experienced by people: spouse-centeredness, family-centeredness, money, work, possession, pleasure, church, friend or enemy-centered, self-centeredness. Now, we're all familiar with self-centeredness. That's where we are. It's all about us. And that we're looking, when you take something like self-centered, that's when your security, guidance, wisdom, and power all comes from yourself. So what are you doing when you're self-centered? You're totally limiting your ability to perform at any given level, because everything is about you. You're concentrating on you instead of building the realm of what's possible with interacting with people, building teams, empowering people. It's because it's all about you. Everything is about you. It's not about creating other things. It's about you. When you look at other of the centeredness, you can look at spouse-centeredness. There are many people in this world. You ask them what their name is, and they go, I am Mrs. John Adams. And their whole life is about being the spouse of John Adams, because John's the vice president of something or president of him. And their whole life is about supporting that spouse. That's their entire life. Well, if you take that position that your life is centered around a spouse and that's your center of your life, all of a sudden your total security comes from what? One person, the spouse. The spouse has a drinking behavior problem, goes out and cheats on you, your whole world is totally destroyed because you're spouse-centered. And that's what happens to us. Our guidance system is dictated by him. We don't have individuality. We're not going out and experiencing our own end is in our life. We're allowing someone else to script our life because of the center of what we've put at the center of our life. This happens with people who are very family-oriented, and this is very detrimental. You can say, oh, Mary Jo, but, loving your family. This isn't about loving your family and being totally committed to your family. I'm totally committed to my family, but I'm not family-centered. The concept of family-centered is where every sacrifice, everything you do in your life is all about your family. And what happens is you can see how some parenting is just horrific parenting because they become so family-centered. They can't remove themselves from their children's lives. All of you have had kids who have gone through high school. You've seen it. You've seen where parents become, they live their children's lives. They live through their kids. I mean, why are these parents, and I can take this is a dramatic result of it, but these parents that go and shoot a football coach because they kicked their kid off the football team. That happened. Of course, all these are great Texas stories. I'm not sure all of you have experienced these in other states, but we had that happen just in the last 12 months here. We also, 2 years, 3 years ago, had a mother who went and killed a cheerleader who got a position on the cheerleading squad when her daughter didn't get. Now, I'm going to tell you, that's There are a lot of ways you can describe that behavior, but it's the ultimate end result of being so family-centered because you've lost your individuality. What are the what principles are you living by in your life? None. You're living it purely out of just being a supporter of a family. That's all you're doing. No matter what that family is, everything is about doing everything the best you can for that individual as you perceive it, instead of coming from a set of core values or principles. So you can take each one of these centers, and it's a great part of Covey's book. If you haven't read it, I recommend you get it, and analyze money-centered. What does money-centered look like? Those would be people that tend to be after money. They want to, everything is about their whole concept in life, and you see that happen a lot, especially with young kids. You see it happen in age brackets. Like kids going through college and first getting out of college, they tend to be very money-centered. Again, this is just a tendency. I'm not suggesting everyone is by any means, but it's a tendency that you have because you want to get out in that work world and you want to make money because you've never had any. So you're out there and money-centered. We can shift from centers to centers in our lives, and typically people do. But money-centered is like, you know, all of a sudden your guidance system is around money, your security comes from how much money you make, your wisdom is your perspective, and how your principles imply in your life tend to be all controlled by how much money you're making or where the money's coming from, and money becomes your power. You see how that works. So you can, whatever that center is for you, it tends to control those other four mechanisms in your life, which is incredible. How we can get so far off base by allowing any of these things to become our center. And what you need to do is the ideal here is to create one clear center from which you consistently derive a high degree of security, guidance, wisdom, and power. So you're not forfeiting that to a person, an individual, an event, and in something in your environment. You're not forfeiting it to that. How many people I see these people all the time become church-centered, and something goes wrong in the church and they quit the church because they're not coming from principles, they're coming from church-centered. It's more about the church. It's about the institution, not about the principles behind it. So you need to find the center in your life needs to be one of where you find the high degree of security, guidance, wisdom, and power. And by centering our lives on principles, if we become principle-centered, that's when we create the solid foundation for development of all these four life support factors, when you become principle-centered. So if you become principle, what's right, what's wrong, what are the principles you lead in your life, now all of a sudden you don't get so entrenched in your daughter's life or your son's life that you do crazy stuff or you can't disassociate or you support them in doing things that are wrong because you can't do that. You're coming from principles always, and that's your core. And you're going to find a lot of conflict because conflicts exist in our life every single day. But when you come from principles, when you come from those core values, now all of a sudden you can deal with all those other things, and they're not dealing with you. They're not controlling you or manipulating you. You're coming with a strong guidance system, tremendous sense of security, tremendous wisdom, and power comes from that. So it's just incredible how you need to develop that kind of a center in your life. It's a great, great chapter, and I just, you know, if you haven't read Covey's book, go and look at it because it really will give you a flavor of where you need to shift to be more powerful. And to develop your personal mission statement, he always talks about family mission statements too, which I think are awesome. I mean, to have a family mission statement that you post in your house when you're raising children is awesome. Because then when anyone has a problem in the family, you have a child that misbehaves or gets in trouble, you sit down, you have a family meeting, and you go right to the core of what is our mission statement as a family? And how is this inconsistent with our mission statement? So you have a base, and in order to develop a family mission statement, do you do it as a husband and wife, or do you do it as a family? You get all your family members involved in helping to draft the family mission statement. So once you've gotten everybody on board, everybody's committed to it. When you draft it and put it upon somebody, now they're not committed to it. So you have everybody participate in the process of developing a family mission statement. That's a great idea for families. If you're young families, even if you're not young families, you can develop a family mission statement. From that, you can have the core. It's kind of your foundation to how you're going to run that family. Sorry. And And but basically for you, the beginning for the end in mind, you need to have your own personal mission statement. And I gave some suggestions on how to do that, you know, in terms of, you know, looking at all the areas, the roles you play in your life, that's going to help you get more of a balanced mission statement. Is your mission statement one sentence? No, your mission statement can be a whole, you know, 12 statements. Can your mission statement be 24 pages? I suggest that's not going to serve you. It's got to be something concise that you can work with, but it doesn't have to be one sentence long. Many mission statements, I would find it hard to do that in one sentence, but a mission statement is something that incorporates who you are, what is your beingness, what is your commitment to your life in terms of who you are, what are those principles that are centered in the core of your life. And now I'm going to open it up. I put a quote at the end. It's a great one, again, out of Covey's book I love. Personal leadership is not a singular experience. It does not begin and end in writing a personal mission statement. It is rather the ongoing process of keeping your vision and values before you and aligning your life to be congruent with those most important things. Okay, now I'm going to open it up. Anyone want to share? Anyone have some reactions, some comments? Can you see yourself in some of the commentary we talked about? It's called Stephen Covey's The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And this would be habit, in his book, it's habit number 2. He has 7 habits of highly effective people. This is habit 2 in his book. Yeah. Oh, the second book is just awesome. It's about, you know, this book is entitled The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. His eighth habit is talking about taking being effective to being great. It's taking it a whole nother level. And it's about really living that vision every moment of your life. It is just awesome. It is just, I'm loving it. In fact, I'm reading it, and as I read it, I go back and I reread. Because it just is so impactful. The nuggets in there are just incredible. I highly recommend that book. But I also recommend, he's unreal. And you know, because he's a man that spends 10 years drafting one book. He doesn't draft a book every month. You know, he's not a book of the month club. He puts a tremendous amount of energy behind his words and what he puts in the context of the book. And it's just amazing what he comes out with. It is really amazing. Yeah. It's called The 8th Habit. It's that simple. Yeah. Stephen Covey, The 8th Habit. And it is excellent. Yeah. It is excellent. Yeah, I love his insight, and I love his insight into people, into how we operate as human beings, and, you know, this whole habit here of, you know, taking yourself and moving you beyond being centered on work or you know, and that's really what is in the S, when we look at the E and the S quadrants, you know, if you want to stay in the self-employed or employee, we're centered on other things. We're not centered on principles. We're not centered on, you know, creating and a visionary. And to move into that, we need to be moving into the visionary realm. We need to be principle-centered and move into a visionary realm of being leaders. And that's what's going to move you out of your S quadrant or E quadrant into the B quadrant. Yeah. Spell his name Covey, C-O-V-E-Y. Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N. Yeah, Stephen Covey. Yeah. And in the outline today, that I listed his first book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. That book's been around for just years, 20, 25 years maybe, I don't know, a long time. And then he just put out The 8th Habit just in the last 12 months. It became available. Yeah. Yep. Uh-huh, Jack. Yep, he's the one who. That's a statement of you know what a mission statement would start to look like. You know, how are you going to touch people's lives? Yeah, and if our goal is to touch as many people's lives as possible, then we build the management part of it or execution part of it is what does that look like? But in what way are we touching people's lives? And he obviously is talking from a Mantic perspective. We want to touch as many lives as possible in terms of bringing them to health, But I think that doing Manatech, you can touch millions of people's lives in many ways. Why is it, why, you know, we might have the health as the lead in, but people, there are just so many awesome ways of touching people's lives and just helping them see life a little differently. Bringing new hope and new health is through the Manatech products, but what about bringing new vision in their life? What about teaching them to take back control of their life, to, you know, script their own lives? We see people every day that are scripted by their environment, by other things, by their past. And that's why we work so hard on putting people through self-development courses and things like that, because we really want to touch their lives in many, many ways, whether it's Manatech or it's some other way. It's just having an impact is what it's about, yeah. Uh-huh. Boy, we got a lot of commotion in the background. We can hardly hear Ginger. Can we star six, people? Mute, star six. Yeah, Ginger, great concept. Great, and I appreciate your share. Yeah, and that's what it's about. It's not just about your health, but you were very family-centered in your life, right? Yeah, and through Manatech, you went through a lot of personal development, personal growth. You have now a great group of friends that support you and very spiritual, very, very much into what is your vision for your life and moving you out of that, yeah. No, yeah. And I would even go further. I'll share this with you. Maybe I hope it doesn't embarrass you. But I think, Ginger, the other thing I saw in your life was that you went from being family-centered with your children to becoming spouse-centered. Yeah, do you see that? It's not going to satisfy you because it's not who you are. Yeah, right, exactly. But see, but you were looking for, that's what happens to us when we lose the center. If we're family-centered and we put all of our energy around the family and that's all we do and all our focus and and then all of a sudden they're gone, then we look for something new to absorb that hole that we've built in our life. And that might become a spouse. Uh-huh. No, I think CD is great too. CD is great. So it just depends on which way you absorb better. Some people absorb better by reading. Other people absorb better by listening. But I have people that buy those CDs and use them in the cars because we spend a lot of time in our cars. So it's a great CD to listen to too. I just find his material pretty heavy. So it's to me it's slower reading. CD might go too quickly for me. I may not absorb what I would if I read. That's just my Mary Jo's impression of it, because there's so many nuggets in every word that he says. He just really is so insightful. It's just pretty incredible. And I mean, the meat of it, you know, you almost have to read it over and over, some of the parts of it, to get it. And on CD, I'm not sure you're going to have that same impact, but it's up to you. Either way, it's just great material to get. Okay, so how was that?